Welcome to the Pure Athlete Podcast, a show that exists to equip young athletes, parents, and coaches as they journey through their youth sports experience. We sit down with some of your favorite athletes to hear about their most memorable moments, helpful tips, and valuable lessons from their youth sports career. Today's episode features All-American and former NFL offensive lineman, Matt Stinchcomb. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Pure Athlete Show, where we're talking all things youth sports. We've got just a great show today. I'm Britt Lee. I'm here with Jeff Rancourt and our special guest today, Matt Stinchcomb. Jeff, you're a Parkview guy.
I am.
And Matt is also a Parkview guy. You probably grew up
watching him. I was about fourth or fifth grade going to the games to watch him with my old man. And they actually kind of turned the program when he was there into what it kind of became.
What a backdoor way to point out how much younger Jeff
was. I was in fourth or fifth grade. Like,
I can remember as an embryo.
I was a little bit younger, you know. It was a lot of fun always watching him in high school. And then, of course, following him, went to Georgia, two-time All-American.
Yeah, fooled him twice. It's not an easy thing to do.
You don't fool your way into the first round in the NFL, though.
Some do, and I will say,
there have been some. You are not one of them.
There's a couple out there.
We're glad to have you here, man. I know you're around the Atlanta area and do a lot of great things here in Atlanta, but kind of catch us up. What are you up to these days?
I've got three great kids, two of them in high school. They're big into sports. They got the little guy who's doing whatever we sign him up for. Enjoying the season of life as best we can, looking into human cloning maybe to see perhaps that might come in handy to get them to and from everything. There's not enough drivers in the house.
Oh, gosh.
But that's been a lot of fun. And then we've got an insurance brokerage business here in Atlanta. Another guy that y'all might want to get on this show one day, David Green. Fellow dog, fellow Gwinnettian, all the way to South Gwinnett, but that's fine. It scrubbed it off.
I played some charity tournaments with him. He used me for my long drives.
Of course. Oh, did he now? Yeah. And then do some college football broadcasting during the fall for ESPN, the SEC Network. It's a fun little conference to cover.
Yeah, I would say so. It's been okay lately.
Yeah, they've really been able to right the ship. They've been able to table a few championships.
Well, we want to spend some time today talking to you about your youth sports story. But before we go there, you've actually been a sports parent now for quite some time. And some big news just happened with one of your kids. Why don't you tell us about it?
Yeah, our oldest, Janie, she started playing volleyball when she was 13-ish. And she's going to get to keep playing in college. She'll play college volleyball at Samford University. So we're really, really excited. She gets to be a Bulldog in Alabama, which is the ultimate combination.
Really rub it in over there.
Any better. Yeah. So we're excited about that. And that was big news. If nothing else, to have that kind of decision behind you a little bit, because there's a lot of pressure in and around these kids, whether it's warranted or not, it's real. So we're grateful to have that decision kind of made and that opportunity set up.
Well, we're going to want to pick your brain a little bit about the parenting side of it. But first, for starters, maybe we start off and talk a little bit about his youth sports.
I love to ask first question. What is your best memory from youth sports? Could be any sport.
Man. We grew up playing soccer. John and I got a younger brother, John, our parents never really pushed us into a lot of things, but would be presented with the opportunity. But at the same time, mom did not want us to play football, didn't want us to play baseball either, because it was a very dangerous sport, as we know. And so I think probably because she knew we lacked the hand-eye coordination.
Yeah.
So for us, it would have been dangerous.
I will tell you this. You did grow out of size for baseball. Unless you're going to be Frank Thomas.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't think about that. So that's why we didn't play, of course. Otherwise, we probably would have been dominant. There's no question. So we grew up playing soccer, and my stepdad coached us, JR, and he's just an awesome human being. Jeff, you know him really well. Gregarious, just never had a bad day, fantastic guy to play for and be around. And so he coached us in soccer. He coached me in basketball. and was a big reason why we finally, why I was finally able to be allowed to play football at Mountain Park Athletic Association there in Lilburn.
So what year was your first year playing football?
That was, I was the under 11-year-old team in fifth grade. And yeah, and our head coach was Steve Brondow, and we had, you know, Tom Platt and Clint Salmon's dad, Bill Salmon's, Ray King, Larry Smith. I mean, I could rattle out Dennis Bowie. It was just a great collection of dads, and they got it. They knew how to push you in a way that was positive, but never kind of intimidating or overwrought. Or you never felt like stressed out of your mind or anything, or like this guy's going to blow torch my eyebrows off if I don't do
like
it right.
Like some people today.
Yeah, like a lot of them today. And especially in football. Football kind of is a magnet for that type. So I would say, you know, the best memories were in practices more so than games. And we had a good team. We competed well. I can't remember who won the youth league championship, and it was probably a team with a horse mascot, but we don't like to say that. We were pretty. Yeah. It's not important. they're not important. The people are, but the place isn't. But it was the practices that I remember the most. And you know, I think back now, and you know, one of those guys, I met him on that practice field, under 11 football, Jason Salmons, and you know, he was in my wedding. We keep up even to this day. So. That's probably the greatest memory. You know, we played for the youth basketball championship one time and lost to John Myers and Blake Longnecker. And I'm not sure. There was a couple of bad calls in that one down the stretch. And Lim Daniels was the referee. So all those guys where it's just you grew up in this kind of sports ecosystem, and it's the it's all parents and people in the community that ran the leagues, that were the officials, that they were the coaches, and they were all parents. And you went to school with their kid, and it was just, it was a great community outside of just the school, to be plugged into.
So tell us a little bit about your journey, you know, from that level of football to, you know, to high school and then eventually ending up at UGA.
Well, we grew up in DeKalb, so we would have gone to Tucker High School, and then Mom started teaching at Trickham Middle School. And so we moved like right down, we didn't move 5 miles, but you're right there at the county line, and Parkview's very close to DeKalb. So Tucker was a machine at that time, and it was not long after T. McFerrin had been there, who's a high school Hall of Famer head coach. And they'd either played for state or won state. So we grew up watching the Tucker Tigers, and that was a big deal, and they were good. And then we go over to Parkview, and Parkview was trash. I mean, just garbage football program. Did not win. And they had a new coaching staff come in from Stone Mountain High School, Chuck Mize and Cecil Flo. And Coach Mize was the head coach. And it, kind of interestingly, Coach Mize was a Tucker High grad and was a great athlete. He was Mr. Tucker, which was had something to do but not all to do with sports, but was a wrestling state champion, was a great catcher in baseball, was an unbelievable all-state football player, was just a jock and a great all-around guy and a amazing leader. And he came over to Parkview, and we won 2 games my freshman year. And I can remember we were kind of thinking like, it wasn't like it is now where it's literally, if you're not winning, your kid's transferring in the middle of the season and we're chasing championships and trophies and draft picks and scholarships. But we were kind of like, I mean, you know, 2 wins. You know, we beat Berkmar and Duluth wasn't even in our classification that year, but we were thrilled to get to 2 wins. And we thought, where are we? You know, this program's used to winning in Tucker, and we're coming over here and we win 2 games and people are doing cartwheels. So that was an interesting transition for us, to say the least. Thankfully, and I think almost entirely owing to their vision for that program, Chuck Mize and Cecil Flo, they laid the foundation that year. And I want to say the next year we made the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And that might have been the first or second time in school history that we had ever made the playoffs. And that was a big deal. We beat Shiloh on the road at South Gwinnett. And that was like the beginning of what became a dynasty. By the time you were there, Jeff, decades later.
Y'all set the road for us. There's no doubt about it. I mean, we just kind of rode the coattails.
Sure. I think there was a little bit more involved than that. But at the time, you know, like whenever you were in fourth or fifth grade, it was not a dynasty. But no. They kind of laid the foundation for it. And it really was top-down leadership. It was because there was no tradition of winning. Those guys didn't really know. There were some good athletes, but they didn't know what it was to win. And Coach Mize told us after we beat Shiloh, he said, guess what, guys? Y'all just learned how to win. And it's not, you think, you know, it's not something that just happens. Oh, we played well and it worked. No, I mean, great teams, great athletes know how to win. And he kind of laid the foundation for what that could look like.
So I want to stop you there because you just said something that's really interesting, that might not happen today because parents would be faced with the decision of, do I keep my kid at the school or do I move them over to this winning program already so they can get exposure? What would you have missed if your parents had taken that approach?
The opportunity to be a part of, like what Jeff would say, you know, laying the foundation, right? And who knows if my timing is always either stunk or maybe I'm the foundation boy. I'm the foundation guy. Maybe we should have gone to that because
you built Georgia up, the foundation there.
Sure. But you get there and I think my freshman year at Georgia, part of you played for state. Then the next year they won state. And then a couple years later, y'all are winning it regularly. And so you miss all that. And I do think that there's an element where when you're chasing that all the time, where you just want to plug and be kind of a cog and a wheel that's already turning, you do, I think, miss that opportunity to be a part of building it. Now, there's nothing wrong with being at a place that's already winning, of course. But there is something lost in that. And in an age of transfers and all this other, and not to get too much on a soapbox, the concern that I have as a parent and observe as a kind of adjunct to the game now is this desire for, I want to win right now.
Instant gratification.
This is kind of this impulsivity of, if I'm not winning right now, where are they winning? Okay, great. I want to go over there. Yeah. And I do think what gets lost there is that, okay, yeah, so were you a part of it? And did they win because of you, or did they just win with you, or were you just in the team photo, or you know, what was the contribution?
Yeah.
And would it have happened if you were never there? And is there value in having been somewhere where maybe you were an integral part and they're making a bowl game?
Yeah.
Or even getting to 500 at a school that hadn't been to 500 in however long. Is there value in that? I think that there's a great deal of value, but they don't give trophies out for that. And that's maybe the element that folks desire most sometimes.
Yeah, or rings. Yeah. I mean, even in the NBA, it's pervasive.
Yeah,
today.
No, it's the same kind of teams every year, seems like. You know, you talked about your parents. You know, how influential were they for you and John? As you mentioned, your little brother played, followed you pretty much the whole way through to Georgia, the NFL, the whole deal. But, you know, how did they kind of deal with y'all playing sports growing up?
They were ideal because there was never, I was thinking about this, knowing we were going to talk about it, and I've talked about it before. I can't think of a time where, and they were all engaged in some form or fashion. JR would be coaching. My dad coached us when we first got started in soccer. And I can't think of a time where after the game, they talked about the game other than it was like, hey, it was a great game. Anyway, yeah. That's pork. That's chicken, hamburger, and just we're moving on. And never really about the performance unless it was positive and always some way to – I mean, I cannot think of a time. I can't think of a time where – and y'all talk about it. You talk about it in the book, you know, where after practice it's the car ride and how dangerous that ride can be. I mean, it's just the opportunity's there and it just happened and it's fresh.
God,
so here's my opportunity. Yeah, let me hammer this home, right?
Absolutely.
You know? And it's
why did you swing at that pitch? Why did you? Absolutely.
I was trying to screw up, Dad.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm glad we got this car ride. Yeah, right? I mean, just thank goodness for riding home together. Really, because I want to harangue. I fall victim to that now as a parent. And I do think back, and there's a certain level of maybe it is guilt, where I think I'm going, who modeled this? Who modeled this for me? Because it wasn't any of the four of them where they ever would be like, you know, so what happened? You know, what was with the false start, man? At home? Are you kidding me? What's the deal? Now it's first and 15, dummy. And that just was never a thing. That was never their element. It was all encouragement. It really was.
So did your love for the game of football just kind of grow as you played?
Yeah, I think part of it was, you know, somewhat of the forbidden fruit, right? You can't play it. And so immediately, you know, how's a kid's, you know, brain work, or really any of our brains, right? It's like, oh, I can't have it? Well, now I'm all the more intrigued.
I want it.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I think so. And partly was that I was successful at it. And so, you know, usually winning breeds enthusiasm. And if you're good at something, then you're more inclined to like it, right? And so that certainly came in handy, you know, because we weren't like us. As we have already documented, we're not the most coordinated children in the world. But bigger guys, and this is a sport, that is the beauty of football, I think, is that there is a role for just about every body type, every skill type, just about. And so because of that, that I think is a lot of it was just that, man, this I think I fit in this sport. And you can get better at it, right? And having the coaches that identify that early and encourage that, and I did. I mean, the youth coaches that I had were about as good as you could have asked for. Looking back on it, you think, man, these guys, you couldn't have cast it any better, which is a blessing that not everybody gets to talk about.
So I'm curious, Matt, as you think about what propelled you to be an All-American at Georgia to play pro football, there's technique and then there's effort. You know, what does that formula look like for you in terms of, you know, were you a master of technique? Obviously, you were good at both, but where did it come for you?
Master. I was a self-declared master.
Yes, technique. We're declaring.
We're declaring.
I was a third-degree black belt in pass protection. I think effort was not an option at our house. That was one thing that for sure that was something that is all you can do is all you can do. That's what Dad would talk about all the time, and that one cut kind of both ways, which is as long as you've done all that you can do, then accept that. And win or lose, A, B, or C on the test, whatever it is, if you did all that you could do, then that's all you can do. But then there's an inverse to that, which is all you can do is all you can do, like, so do that.
Yeah.
And anything less than that is not acceptable, yeah. Right? And so it's not, they were not very outcome focused. They were more process focused, which would be probably more in our vernacular now. I don't think that they thought that through then.
Sure, sure.
So the effort thing was always there.
For your brother too?
Yes.
Y'all just had that in
it
you?
I don't know if it's innate.
Yeah.
You know, some kids are natural grinders.
Sure.
I wouldn't say either one of us are natural, like wake up and just grind it out.
Mm-hmm.
But that was an expectation from both sets, you know, all four. Mom, dad, stepmom, stepdad, they all were just kind of like, you know, you kind of lay your shoulder to the wheel, and if it turns out, great, but make sure that shoulder's on the wheel. So that wasn't a thing. But, like, the technique part, probably, because I'm not, like, some overwhelming athlete. You know, no one's going to mistake me for that. So I think that's an outgrowth of the effort part, too, though, right, because there's talent and there's skill, and there's talented people out there that maybe can get by on that for a while, right? And then there's others that are less talented, but they develop a skill and they can outstrip somebody else's superior talent. And then the great ones are the ones that have both, right? And those are easy to identify. You see that all the time. It's not every day that some guy just grinds himself to being the best. No, you know, there's more than a modicum of talent there. And I think my success was certainly more owing to the effort and the environment that I was ultimately blessed to be in just about throughout my entire career.
Yeah. Well, you know, for me, you know, I was a multi-sport athlete. You know, I want my kids to play all different sports. What would you say to the parent that's like, hey, my kid's 10 years old, they need to pick a sport and go with it?
That they're wrong?
Yeah.
I mean, the evidence is everywhere, and all the even was it Tim Corbin at Vanderbilt?
Yeah,
where he talks about it. He's like, baseball. I don't want a guy. I don't want a guy that just plays baseball. I'm sure he's got guys that just played baseball, but what I'd like to see is I want an athlete that can play baseball. Mm-hmm. And you know, Smoltz, I think maybe one of the more famous speeches, at least in my mind, in his Hall of Fame acceptance speech, where he's talking about and was adamant that there not be specialization. And so what's unfortunate is it seems like, you know, we've developed these ideas that are not supported by fact, that where it's just the facts just aren't with you. You think you have to specialize and you're wrong. And the goal seemingly is to chase a scholarship or whatever it might be. And you're going, I don't know. It seems like all the folks that ultimately get that, if that's the goal, they were probably going to get there whether they played it year-round or not.
Yeah.
And I realize that 100%. That's kind of contrary to the skill part. You know?
But I agree. But look, if you're good, they're going to find you.
They'll find you.
That's what I tell a lot of the baseball parents. And, you know, Matt was there, but at Parkview, we had Coach Buchanan, the baseball coach, and Coach Flo, the football coach, and they were so good working together to let you play both sports and being accommodating. I go around, even Gwinnett County, outside the county when I travel for stuff, and you talk about how many coaches now are, you know, football coaches telling a kid you can't miss football workout when they have, you know, maybe a perfect game showcase, that's a big deal. Or then you got a random Tuesday night game and you got passing league and you go to this Tuesday night game. And it's just amazing to me how they cannot work together.
Yeah.
And I always try to sit there and say, for kid's sake, this is a kid.
Yeah.
And you're I'll never forget my junior in football. My dad was at the Parkview game. He always sat at the 10-yard line because he didn't want to talk to all the parents. He wanted to watch a game. And there was a coach from East Cobb. I'm not going to say his name, baseball guy. And he came over and basically told my dad he was an idiot for letting me play football because I could get hurt and cost me millions. And my dad, as he said, if we weren't in a family setting, my dad basically said, don't tell me how to raise my kid. He's out there my dad said he looked out there and I was like headbutting one of the guys, you know, getting pumped.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, you're having the time of your life. But I think we've robbed so many of these kids chances to develop in other sports.
So yeah. Let me ask you, how did that play out with your daughter in volleyball?
Yeah, well, and for her, it was less a specialization than it was an aptitude, where she was good at volleyball. She played basketball for a little while. Mm-hmm. It was not, you know, just was not, she was okay. She's tall, right?
Yeah.
But so it was more like the sport chose her, mm-hmm. so to speak, than mm-hmm. it was like, well, I would have played this, but I feel like I need to focus on one.
Yeah, yeah.
And when we look back really on really my older two, both of them, I think I swung, John can speak for himself, but we swung so far opposite the direction of what we observed elsewhere with other parents, and especially I think parents who were athletes for an extended period of time, where this is like a central part of our family's existence, and from an age and to an extent where you're like, maybe not healthy. And we probably swung a little too far to the opposite, where it was like, we don't even watch sports really, it's kind of incidental. Some of my kids to this day are probably like, we went to a couple of Braves games last year and they literally were going, okay, so who are these guys that are kind of standing towards the middle? And you're like, and now of course with the shifts and all that other, you're going, well, the third base.
Well, the third base is, you can tell your kids is, I broadcast 100 games and I still think that way. Why is he over there? And what's going on?
Well, last year I'm going, so Austin Riley's the third base, but he's not over there
now. That's
okay, so he's in short right field. And here's why that would happen. Let's eat some popcorn. But it's so because of that, you know, it wasn't like she played soccer and she did, but you do that up until the point where it's like, I think when she'd reach high, she's not going to play high school soccer at her school. And same would be largely true for basketball, but it wasn't volleyball in lieu of anything, right? So it wasn't, well, we're going to do this.
It's what she wanted to do.
Yes. There wasn't a, it wasn't sacrificial elsewhere.
Yeah.
And you see that a lot. I mean, even you know, growing up and you're talking about, you know, the East Cobb coach. And I can think of guys that I grew up with that were really good athletes and they could play three sports. And they chose, because we were blessed at Parkview to where they kind of, everybody kind of played nice and the coaches understood. They're like, there's athletes that can do a lot of different things. I don't have to have this guy all the time.
Yep.
And that was, you know, a lot of places aren't like that anymore, clearly. And, you know, with the advent of club sports, and so now it's even outside of a school setting. And
100%.
There is no reason, right, to play nice, because it's like, I'm not even at your school. I don't care if the football coach likes me or doesn't like me. I don't need any of his athletes. I'm just pulling from all these different communities. And I'm saying, you can't miss a match or you can't miss a practice, and that's it. So, you know, choose your horse to ride.
Yeah. And that's sad that people put a thought on a kid and then let some parents make a decision that it's not worth it.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, I heard you talk about your coaches growing up and how great they were. So I got to ask you, you don't have to name names, okay, and especially for the worst coach, but who's the worst coach you've ever had and why? Mm. And who's the best coach you've ever had and why?
I don't think I can pick a best. I really don't.
Give me a trait on why they were so good.
I will say the first coach that probably had the biggest impact on me was Dennis Bowie. He was our defensive coordinator, I guess, at Mountain Park Athletic Association. So yeah. He had girls. He coached them in softball. They were grown, and he just loved football and loved coaching and loved kids. And he coached, I don't know how long he had been at the league. And once you got into eighth grade, you know, and then he would bounce back down. He'd coach the guys under 11, then U-12, and then you get to eighth grade. And, he was the first one that led me to believe, hey, man, I could be kind of good at this. And I thought that I was the only one he called me Gorilla Britches, because I had, you know, kind of a big butt and legs. But then,
write that down.
Yeah, hey, gorilla britches.
You might go to jail for that today.
Yeah, for real. Well, I know what I learned later was that it wasn't even for me. Like he the next kid comes up. You're also a girl. But he would be the first one that I could think of. But gosh, there's countless other, you know, Roy Massey, who was an institution at our high school and only recently passed. And, you know, he was a great coach. He was not coaching us on technique.
No.
I mean, there was none of that. It was pure just.
You couldn't even understand him half the time.
No. I mean, yeah, he'd get wound up and he's got a big, you know,
big jaw.
A lot of chewing gum. He does. Chewing substance. And, it was their enthusiasm. And they were authentically there for you. And it wasn't about them. They didn't make it about them. And maybe that was the thing, if I could boil it down, that was probably what made them so effective, was that it just wasn't about, they didn't make it about them.
Yeah.
It was about always, the kids. It was always about the kids.
So what's the worst? Like I said, you don't have to mention it.
Yeah, no. Nah. Well,
you can if you like.
I won't.
More than welcome.
No, there's no. But there's some. You know, like I was saying, like with football, football does seem to attract as if you have to be a yeller, and there's this. Well, if you don't do this, and if I'm not hard on them, then they won't play tough, and all that, which is just
dumb.
It's such a load. Yeah, it is the lowest common denominator coaching. The loudest coach, the one that's yelling. Now, you can be loud and not be yelling.
Yeah,
you know, there's
sure.
a difference, right? So hear my message, not my tone and all that stuff. But it's their tone and it's the intent. And you're just going, that's lowest common denominator stuff.
Yeah.
And the great coaches, they'll listen to you anyway. You know, I don't have to – they don't have to use all the unfortunate euphemisms that you'll hear on a football field and other sports too, I suppose. But, you know, there have been more than a handful of those. And playing offensive line, there's, I think, a misconception that, you know, you have to just kind of stick your face in the wood chipper, and if you can't, then you can't play.
See ya.
Yeah, it happens a lot. And so, there was more than a couple of those, but they're paled in comparison. And I will say that the one coach that I would probably spring to mind, he was an anomaly on that staff. The balance of that staff was more than enough to accommodate the fact that that coach probably shouldn't have been out there.
So I want to ask you, and I'll kind of ask both of you this. You're both pro athletes. So, and we went down through this list of accolades in your bio. So it, for a lot of parents and kids out there, they would think, well, these guys really never faced adversity in sports in high school or even college, maybe in the pros, but I'm sure that's probably not true. Can you talk a little bit about a time that you've, you know, faced some big time adversity in athletics and how you overcame that?
Sure. Yeah, there's more than a handful. I would say the biggest one would have been in Oakland. I had, before going to Oakland, I had injured my shoulder dislocated playing Auburn my senior year. And I had been really blessed. And I think this is true of a lot of guys, athletes, where the biggest factor to their success is that they're able to stay healthy. Because then you can keep practicing, you can keep playing, and you can, you know, stack success on success, or, you know, learning opportunities on learning opportunities. It's hard to do that in the training room. And so I had not missed, I'd never missed any time. I knew what it was like to be hurt, but not really injured. You know, I was never really I wasn't out of the lineup. And that happened, and my shoulder was not right. I mean, you get it as good as you can get it, and then you don't want to impact your draft status, and there's some gamesmanship there, but the shoulder was not right. And my rookie year in Oakland, it just would not stay in socket or whatever. I don't know. Whatever,
whatever the proper word is.
My shoulder didn't stay where the shoulder was supposed to be. So it was going other places. And I came back from that. It was an extensive surgery. It was James Andrews did the surgery. He's done everybody's surgery. At least he's standing there when the surgery happens.
I've always wondered that.
Yeah. I think he's just standing there in his duck boots, right?
Does he just come by and say, "That looks good"?
Yeah.
On to the next one.
Close her up.
Yep.
But and even he had said at the time, he was like, this was one of the worst ones and however many anchors. So it just wasn't ideal, especially the position I played. And I came back and I was playing really poorly, really poorly. And it was, part of it was physical, because I know I wasn't physically back, but mentally I didn't trust it. I'm trying to play with one hand versus guys that are getting paid to beat guys with two hands. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm effectively a rookie. And that when I was injured, the year I was injured, and really the year even when I came back from that injury, by then so much of who I kind of perceived myself to be was wrapped up in playing football or being a football player, that not doing that for a year for the first time, I was not mentally prepared for that. And even coming back from it, clearly was not mentally prepared for it, to the point where I was like, I'm done. I ain't even played a single regular season game. And I went down to my position coach, met with the head coach, met with the owner. This is in camp, in training camp. And I was like, I think I'm hanging it up, guys. I'm not the player you drafted. I'm not playing the way I should be playing. And thankfully, once again, they just were like, no, we hear you. Yeah, no, you're not quitting. They just wouldn't have it. They would not have it. And I missed that practice, which to this day I feel guilty, because in that ecosystem, if one guy's gone, now everybody else has to pick up his rep. So you totally hosed your brothers, your teammates. And
they're not happy with you.
They weren't happy with it, but then they figure out what happened. Yeah. And what's crazy is, it never came up. They never brought it up. Like, hey, man, I mean, you're going to tap out for a practice? Oh, you're going to quit on us? None of it. There's not a ton of empathy in a football locker room, but it's like, I don't know, they got it. It was a supernatural type of thing, honestly, because it certainly wasn't natural. The natural reaction would be like, suck it up.
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't the case. And none of those guys, I would have walked for sure. I definitely would have shut it down. And none of those coaches would have it. The owner wouldn't have it. They're just like, tough. And back then you had to pay it back. It wasn't like, hey, I'm out of here. You keep your bonus for Christmas. No, it was pre-tax. I mean, all that stuff but they just weren't going to have it. And you just think, God, man, it's just another incidence where you're surrounded by people that wanted what was best for you. Because the way I was playing, it wasn't like they were going, well, if this guy walks, we're in deep trouble. They were probably like, well, I mean, you know, I don't know. If you
can't play better
than this, yeah. But they wouldn't have it. And that was a big, big inflection point. That was some pretty serious adversity.
Yeah.
And you played, what, 8, 9 more years?
I played another 6 years.
Six years, okay. Okay. Yep. Wow.
What advice would you give to young athletes about their sports journey? And really from, you know, 7, 8 years old up until high school?
I would say, it goes back to kind of what we were touching on before. I would play as much as you can. And by that, I mean, not just as much from a volume, hey, get out on the court, but as many sports that you might be interested in to do it. And this was a mistake that I think I made, which was you might have your primary sport, and so you get used to being good at that. And then maybe the expectation is, well, I should be good at these other sports. And if it's not an expectation, it's almost like a perception, a perceived expectation from others that, yeah. You know, so you go out there and you're only scoring like 2 points and get 4 rebounds or whatever it is.
You stay.
You're a donkey on the basketball court. So you just don't play. And to me, so you see that kind of, right, where some of these kids are really good at this one thing. And I wonder maybe that's why they end up honing in, is this fear of failure or the perception that, oh, well, you know, you're not
I can't
as
be
good.
Great in 2 or 3 things. So.
Yeah, which is hard to do, right? You were excellent in 2 different sports. That's a rarity. And yet, there's other kids out there that wouldn't be excellent in 2, but they might be pretty good. Or you lose out on the team dynamic that you otherwise would. Yeah, you know, so I wasn't. I get 2 minutes on the floor, and I use all my 5 fouls, and that's my contribution. But you know,
you're
I'm on
getting
the team.
Good fouls in.
Yeah, you're making them count, right?
Yeah,
he's not coming in the lane.
Taking
them
to the ground.
Yeah, it's. But
you miss out on that friend.
But you miss
stuff,
out,
and that's the shame of it.
Yes. Yeah. Agreed. So that I think. That would probably be a primary one only because it seems like that feeds into the idea of you kind of pick one and stick with it. I'm not sure that there's not an element of fear that drives that decision, which is like, well, you know, I'm not going to be as good at these others, so it's not worth the endeavor.
Yeah.
Like, that's too bad because there's value to be had other than just being, you know, really good at it.
Is there anything you'd do different as you look back over your journey?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, there's a lot that I would do different. I think, you know, I would have continued to play basketball, even though I probably wouldn't have done it very well. I think I would have done that. I think I missed out on that. And who knows, maybe it's only 2 years of high school ball. But I think that would have been fun. I mean,
yeah, your younger brother played, John played.
Yeah. And he, so that's a thing, right? And then another, I mean, I don't think that I appreciated the ride as much as I could have or should have, that it's so unique to be able to play and get to play as long as I got to play and as other guys get to play. I think other guys did a better job of appreciating what that opportunity really was. I wouldn't say I took it for granted, but I didn't appreciate it for what it really was. So I would do that differently from a mental approach. I think that would have been – different, make it less of a burden's not the right term, but you know, after a while it's like, this is just what I'm going to do, and it no longer felt like a game. It felt more like a almost like a responsibility or an obligation, and you think that's not really it either. It's weird because you know, you get to the pros and it's a job. But it's also a game that you grew up playing.
Absolutely.
But now
man.
It's also a job, but it's also a game. And
there's got to be a balance.
There's got to be a balance.
There's got to be balance. But you cannot forget, to me, when you're doing it to have fun, because most of the time when you're having fun, that's when you play your best.
Yeah. There was a kid, Ben Boulware, that said
yeah.
that from Clemson.
Yep.
He said, if I can't have fun with it, I'm done with it.
Yeah, but it's kind of true. I mean, it's like if you're not out there really enjoying yourself, you're not going to get the best out of you. And then – at the end of the day, I'm sure you played with guys in football, the same with baseball, the Debbie Downer teammates. You're like, I don't want to be around that guy.
No, it's so true.
He is bringing me down every single day
yeah.
in here. You know, but I do think that's why we have to, as parents and coaches, protect our kids so much from themselves for that. You know, and I know my mom and dad did for me. They shielded a lot of that stuff so I could just go play.
Yeah. And have fun. Yeah. I hear a lot of guys say in y'all's positions that Friday nights are the funnest memory that they have
yeah.
in sports.
I say it all the time. I got a chance to play. I know you played in the Super Bowl. I got to play in the World Series. The feeling of running out there with your friends on Friday night, I still never got that in a World Series game, which is it's crazy to think, but it's true.
Yeah.
It's the best. To me, the best sport, obviously I'm biased, but the best form of sport, team sport,
yeah.
is high school football.
Mm.
And it's
you got to be,
especially in Georgia.
You think about in baseball, basketball, one guy in basketball can take over. If you have a starting pitcher out there who's dealing, he can take over a game. Even if they don't score runs, you can be 0-0 in the ninth inning.
Right.
But in football, I don't care how good a quarterback you are. We see it all the time. If you don't have a line, you're getting crushed.
Yeah.
And so
the guy on the line is probably, I mean, you might have to play 185-pound pulling guard because that's just what we got.
Yep.
That's
the fun of sports and the parents, you know.
So, Matt, you know, with Pure Athlete, one of the things we're trying to promote is that, you know, everybody's sports journey ends at some point. I mean, for you guys, it ended at the pro level. For 99%+ of everybody else, it ends sometime before that.
Yeah.
But there's just great things to learn about life from sports. There's great things when you're finished with sports that if you're intentional about what you learned in sports, they apply to life. I see you do a lot of things since your sports career has been over. Can you just talk a little bit about what you gained from sports in addition to, you know, playing in the league and money and all that kind of stuff, but just life lessons that have made you kind of the man that you are and the dad that you are now?
There's so many, especially in a team sports environment, but I think chief among them is relationships and that people matter. And in a sporting context or a sports context, you'll find yourself spending time with and interfacing with people that maybe you wouldn't have either had the opportunity or chosen to do so in any other context. So were it not for that, maybe I never would have had that opportunity. That proved to be huge for me in a variety of ways, but that relationships. But the other is in a team dynamic, and football being one of them, but even in sports where there can be dominance and, you know, just clear out the lane and give Kobe the ball and, you know, there's a decent chance we win. That you have to be, it has to be about something other than you. It can't be just about you. You're not going to be successful. The team won't be successful. So there's an element of selflessness that team sports, or at least the ones that I got to participate in, requires. That I think there's other places that you could certainly learn that. I don't know really a good proxy for it, though. And those kind of go hand in hand. It's the focus of something outside of yourself and something other than the outcome, as important as that is. And it ends up being, it's the people you're with and who you're trying to accomplish whatever it is with. It's the team. It's not just me. And it's the big team, little me, and all those little sayings is that's the biggest takeaway. Because it's easy to be inward facing and it's easy to put myself first. And gosh knows I fail at it countless times a day. But that experience with those teams, that sport, those coaches, those are probably the two biggest takeaways is that it's amazing what you can accomplish and with whom you can accomplish it if, in fact, the goal is something outside of your own
yourself
self or personal gain. There's a million others, but those are the two, I think, that stick the longest.
Yeah, that's great.
You know, you think about family is a big, obviously, deal for you, and you've had a great upbringing. Now that you're seeing your kids play, you're being out there, you're coaching them, what's one thing that you know, your parents did or didn't do with you that you for sure are trying to instill in your kids now as they grow and play?
That they, despite what I was sharing earlier, because this is totally contrary to my upbringing, is that you're not like your value to us has got nothing to do with what's happening on that court or in the pool or wherever else. They never, my upbringing would underscore that bold print, you know, scream it from the rooftops. This is just a sport. This is just a game. We'd love for you to be good at it. And it's a great thing for you to show progress and all the things that you play sports for. But this is not a qualifier. You know, this is not a, you're not the only standard, right? Goes back to the effort thing, but it was never like, hey man, you know, listen, you know, we've been driving you to practice. And so where are the wins? Like, where are these dubs? So I'm looking for some numbers. It wasn't something that they were seeking to quantify. And that for sure is something that we want them to know, that this is just, we're in this.
Have fun.
For all the right reasons. You try to keep that front and center and have fun with it and get better and, you know, give effort.
Work
all
hard,
those things. Yeah. But, you know, you don't come home with the trophy and now we'll be disappointed, but your value is completely independent of all that. That's part of it.
Great stuff. Great stuff. I think that's a great note to kind of wrap it up on. Matt, thanks so much for being
with
us.
Thanks for having me. Yeah. Thanks for doing this. This is Pure Athlete's a great initiative. It's a needed initiative. And so I'm grateful for y'all's efforts here.
Well, we appreciate it. You know, the audience doesn't know this, but Brad and I and then Jeff have been talking about Pure Athlete for a long time, and we've actually had some lunches with you and batted this whole idea around, and you've been super helpful. You wrote an endorsement on my book, which I'm very grateful for. So you know, and on top of that, all the things that you talked about here today, we've kind of watched play out, not just in your life, but as an athlete, but as a dad. And which I know you're probably more interested in than anything else.
No, and I think I got to second that. I have to say I grew up watching you, not trying to make you feel old again. But, you know, when you do these things and really you talk, I think it's great because, like something you just said at the end, you know, your value is not in what you do. I think that's so – I find myself sometimes try not to go there, but, like, you know, why did you not do this? And then I agree, the car ride home when all they want to do is go get some ice cream.
Yeah.
You know, and at the end of the day – you want them to compete. I love what you said too, just finishing up the effort, because that I think that's important. The effort's got to be there.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not out there giving effort, then we're going to have issues.
Yeah.
But if you're putting the effort in, like you said, then let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah.
So thank you, man.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Appreciate
this is great.
It.
Appreciate it, Matt.
Thanks, Brett.
And thank you to all of you for listening today. We'll look forward to seeing you next time on the Pure Athlete Show.
Thanks for joining us today for the Pure Athlete Podcast. To hear more, find us anywhere you stream podcasts, as well as on our website at www.pureathleteinc.com. See you next time!